Welcome to Locked On NFL, taking you around the league daily here on Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. Alongside the scout Matt Williamson, I am Brian Peacock. You can subscribe to this show and all your favorite podcast apps. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can follow Matt at Williamson NFL. Matt, we went off the air just before the trade deadline, and there was tons of rumors and tons of things that would look like would happen or could happen. I think the story of the actual deadline day Tuesday was the trades that did not happen. I want to get into all of that stuff, maybe some winners and losers of the trade deadline, but there was one deal that did get done, and the two most active teams, I think, during the season so far was the Dolphins and the Rams. The Dolphins get cornerback Aqib Talib, and really the important part there is they got a fifth-round draft pick. The Rams get a future seventh-round pick, so basically Miami buying a fifth-rounder here in L.A., clearly just getting rid of some salary.
Yeah, and it's a lesser version of the Osweiler from Houston to Cleveland move. And
yes,
you probably know stuff about the NBA. I guess this is prevalent in the NBA, right?
Yeah, just moving contracts around, and there's guys that just sit on the bench that make $15 million a year. It's crazy.
And so somebody has to eat it. And obviously Miami has the cap space. But I do think what's kind of noteworthy here is, first of all, they increased their draft capital by taking on a contract. But I also think it's noteworthy that Xavien Howard was not traded. And, you know, I studied the Dolphins a lot this week because they came to town. And obviously they're a way lesser version, but they're trying to build themselves much as Detroit is in the Patriots manner. And it's especially true on defense. And those three are the three man-to-man coverage heaviest teams in the league. And so while they're getting rid of dudes left and right, I do think it's interesting that now they have two man-to-man proven, you know, potentially shut down corners. Talib ain't what he used to be, but the fact that he's a corner that's had success in such a scheme, I don't think is an accident either.
Yeah, the player they got makes some sense too for the Dolphins, and Howard going on IR now, so he's going to be done. And it's not clear. You mentioned trading Howard. It seemed like, and right about the time they traded Minkah, he went public on Twitter, and you could tell there's some frustration there. One of our listeners thought that I was maybe a little bit wrong about him not trying too hard in that game against the Steelers on some particular plays, and maybe that he was playing hurt. So maybe he gets the benefit of the doubt on that one. But at some point, the Dolphins, they have to create a culture there, and everyone has to be on board and ready to play and playing their butts off to win games in the NFL, because it's not easy to do.
No, it absolutely is not. And that part's interesting, too, because if you are going to add a veteran to the locker room, and I don't know Aqib Talib, but he has sort of a checkered past. He's bounced around the league. He's got a reputation, at least, of not being, an A-plus stand-up guy either.
That's a very good point. Very good point. Real quick, let's go through the trades that did happen at the deadline and then talk about some of the things that I thought didn't happen, maybe some winners and losers. Los Angeles kind of bookended this trade activity over the last couple of weeks. The Jacksonville Jaguars obviously got a huge haul for Jalen Ramsey, two firsts and a fourth from the Rams. The New England Patriots, they brought in Mohamed Sanu from the Falcons for a second-round pick. The Raiders traded Gerrion Connolly to the Texans for a third. 49ers get Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth for a third and fourth-round picks going to Denver. The Seattle Seahawks send a fifth-round pick to Detroit for Quandre Diggs and a seventh. The Patriots made another move, sending Michael Bennett to the Cowboys for a late-round pick, a seventh that could become a sixth. Leonard Williams going from New York Jets to New York Giants for a third and fifth. Dolphins running back Kenyon Drake goes from Miami to Arizona Cardinals, and the Eagles traded a fourth in 2021 to the Browns for Jannard Avery. And then along with the Talib deal, that was pretty much the trade deadline, and things definitely more active than they have been in the past. So that was fun, even though at the actual deadline, there were some trades that did not come to fruition.
Yeah, I think it's fun that we were disappointed there weren't more moves, where if this would have happened 5 years ago, it would have been like, what a crazy trade deadline, you know? Exactly. So it's cool that the standards have changed. There was a lot of deals that seemed like they were close that didn't end up happening. They would have been fun to talk about. But one little note is I found it interesting that a few teams that none of us really view as contenders, and the Giants and Arizona come to mind especially, are trading for players, you know, trading picks for players. And I think there's a couple ways of looking at it. Is first off, maybe they disagree with us and think they have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year. Fine. Or I also think that, and we've talked about this in previous weeks, that there's less of a stigma of giving up a pick now for a proven entity. And I think that's even true with, quote, the lesser teams.
I think it's a lot easier to convince fans. If you're buying or selling, it's a lot easier to convince your own ownership of what you're doing, I think, right now. And the more teams make trades and the more interesting things that happen around the league, I think that just makes trades in the future all that much more easy as well, because people realize that that's what's happening and they're okay with it, and maybe some new ideas and some new ways of building a team. The interesting thing for me to track this is can teams fully rebuild? And that's the difference between the NFL and the NBA is if you tank and you get LeBron James, you're great for 15 years, right? Unless, you know, unless you're Cleveland and he moves on and goes to Miami. But you instantly
still
change.
Still got a lot of wins out of him, though.
Right, yeah, exactly. And they ended up getting a title with LeBron. And in the NFL, even if you do get your quarterback, you still need a ton of other stuff. And the quarterback is the thing. So the teams that did tank, and we'll see, like, for example, actually, you know what? Let's step aside here. I want to talk about the non-trades and the difference between some of the teams that did trade and did not. This episode is brought to you in part by Roman. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. The secret to lasting longer in the bedroom. Get $10 off your first order of Swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL.
We're almost halfway through the NFL season, so now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game with our buddies at MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be gigantic. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back in the game. Here's the best part. If you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit, and you can use it on all your favorite picks. Use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
The point I was going to get to there a minute ago, and I want to talk about the Bengals, who did basically nothing. And it's not super surprising because they have a weird front office there. AJ Green will probably walk, and maybe you get a comp pick for him. Cincinnati made the decision to bench Andy Dalton with plenty of time to deal him before the deadline. Even if you have to eat some salary, you know, get something for him, maybe let him try to compete somewhere else. But the Bengals did nothing. So they are winless. The Dolphins are winless and have added a bunch of draft picks. It will be interesting to see the skew from this date forward in what difference the tank job for the Dolphins made versus the Bengals, who did nothing at the deadline, and see the difference in those two franchise trajectories if the Dolphins are able to turn all of that draft capital into a super competitive team. I think that's going to be a fun thing to watch from this point forward.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, and maybe we should make like the trade deadline the start of the race, you know, and just say, okay, one decided to sit on their hands and stick with what they've got. And I mentioned yesterday that there's kind of a feeling around the league that they overvalue their own guys when you talk trade with them. And maybe they like their guys, and maybe they're right, and maybe Joe Mixon really is a really good running back. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're right. Where, obviously, Miami's not exactly tied to anybody, and if you offer me the right deal, boom, you're gone. But I'm sitting here thinking, let's assume Well, they're going to play this year. So let's assume in the end they end up both picking in the top three or four. One of them ends up with the first overall pick. We don't know which one that is. And maybe Miami's playing better than Cincinnati right now. Like, on a neutral field, is Miami favored over the Bengals? Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they actually have had some good first halves. So my question to you, and I'm going to think about it too, is who would you rather be the GM of starting right this minute?
Definitely the Dolphins for me. Really? Absolutely 100%, because I think not only the draft capital there, but I think it's sort of an ownership trickle down. And yeah. I know that if I was GM of the Dolphins, I would be able to get a full complement of scouts and everything to go in my scouting department and to utilize those draft picks, because the Bengals have the fewest amount of scouts in the NFL. So I would definitely choose Miami, I think, for multiple reasons. And I don't think it's really even super close, even though I think that there are some blocks in Cincinnati, some building blocks, you know, Joe Mixon and some other players that are talented, some players on the defensive side of the ball. I think they should be better, even though right now they're not playing like it.
Yeah, I think so too, especially if we're keeping our young coaches, you know, that my big worry with Tank Jobs is, and I think we're seeing it in Cleveland, is where are the winners? Where are the leaders? How do you build the culture with a bunch of dudes that are young and then their contracts all expire at the same time? You know, like, at some point, they're going to have to pay Myles Garrett and Njoku and, you know, all these guys at once.
Yes.
But I also think when you compare Cincy to Miami, Miami might not have a culture. They're building a culture, where Cincy might just have a bad culture. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It might be a negative already. I do think we agree that Cincinnati has better players right this minute. And, you know, Jonah Williams is coming back, and he may be a fixture on that line for a lot of years. I don't think we can forget about him. And they do have some guys. But Miami also has three firsts and a bunch of picks in the next two drafts, too, and more cap room. And I think your point's a really good one, too, that let's just say I trust ownership to spend money to help me win more in Miami than I do Cincinnati.
And that has to be one of the factors of trying to turn things over quickly and rebuild fast. And we saw it in Cleveland. And actually, Cleveland might be that ideal so far from what we've seen with this idea, and Sashi Brown trading all of those draft picks and trading those players and setting up the next regime to actually get things done. They weren't able to see it all the way through. And I think the old group didn't do the best job drafting. So Dorsey kind of came over and had a really nice situation to take over, which is kind of why I would want to take over that Miami situation. But the Browns kind of nailed it in the draft. They got their quarterback, or at least it looked like they had drafted their quarterback number one overall. They had got a dynamic edge rusher. They had got a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And maybe they messed up the coaching part of it. We'll find out. And the offensive line is still a work in progress, but then they made some big trades on top of it. So you have all of those assets together. It can come together fast if you do get a quarterback, if you do get those super important positions like edge rusher in the draft. That can happen quickly. It's not probably one offseason, but two offseasons and then a big trade, and you spend some money in free agency. You can collect a lot of talent in two calendar years in the NFL as long as you have the patience to do so. And I think if you're going to go that route, it has to start with maybe trading off some pieces. So I think I like what the Dolphins are doing here, and I would probably consider them a winner and maybe the Bengals a loser, because they set themselves up and they have the same record. You know, it's not like the Bengals think they can be in it and win right now and still not trade.
And I'm sure they could have gotten something for Dalton. You know, I mean, right. He's not the quarterback of the future. You've already decided to bench him. I just saw the clip on NFL.com that he said something, just the headline saying, "I tried to get out," or something like that. You know, like, so, yeah. I mean, so it wasn't like, you know, he would have been adverse to going or anything like that. But I want to go back to Cleveland real quick, because couple of interesting notes, though, in a very Browns-like fashion, though, and boy, do they have a history of doing this. Like, they have nobody from their 2016 draft on their team. They've already traded Corbett and Avery, and I know that's not like first-round pick. That's not like trading, you know, Richardson, the running back, but you drafted them just a year ago, and you're already moving on from the first pick in the second round and I think a fourth rounder. Like, that's just such a Browns mentality, and it makes me a little crazy. I understand that there's, you know, maybe they didn't fit in so great. And I also think about you mentioned Dorsey, that, you know, this hypothetical of us taking over the Bengals or Dolphins, how much fun would it have been Dorsey? And, you know, Sashi does all the hard work and, you know, makes all the, sets you up so perfectly, and you sit down at the poker table with a bunch of aces in your hand. Like, yeah, I could draft Myles Garrett.
Exactly. You know, right. Yeah. And I think when we look back, and Dorsey gets a ton of credit, and he's not afraid to go after the biggest of big names, and he's accumulated talent. But, yeah, I think he probably jumped into one of the best situations I've ever seen for a GM to get into as far as what he was able to start with and a young roster and have ownership that wants to win and wanted to help him out. And he was able to spend money and bring in some big-time talent via trade. And he's done some great things, too. But, yeah, that's a great point about the Browns. And it started before Dorsey, and it's gone into some of the Dorsey picks, actually. It was just getting rid of guys that they just drafted, which is curious. And I guess if you make your determination, because you're not going to hit on all your draft picks, you're only going to hit on about half of them. So the ones you don't hit on, if you can flip them sooner rather than just sitting there and having a guy not play, maybe he's ahead of the game. Maybe that's the smart way to do it. But it is interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, Corbett never really seemed to fit in, but Avery did. Maybe just doesn't fit this new defense. And you're right. I mean, if it's just, you know, Trent Richardson's a great example. I mean, if you know you missed and you can get an asset in return, great. But I don't know that was the case with these guys. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the nobody stays there.
And then when you miss on Richardson, you got to turn it into something better than Johnny Manziel, which is what happens. So
that's the obvious problem.
Kept screwing it up there.
The other real point about this rebuild tank thing I just want to throw out there, because you mentioned, like, if you draft LeBron, you're going to be good. You know, I mean, maybe you're not, you know, maybe he doesn't turn into the all-time great that you expect, Zion or whoever. But even if you draft Tua or whoever, even Lawrence from Clemson, who's supposedly the super prospect, or Luck, who is maybe the best quarterback prospect I've ever seen, it still takes a quarterback 3 years. You know what I mean? Like, they don't come in and be Pro Bowlers usually from Jump Street, you know?
And you get to look at what the Browns just did, and you say to yourself, okay, let's get an offensive tackle, first of all. If we're going to get a quarterback, let's get a tackle also. And maybe personalities should be something that you take a real, real, real strong look at. Not that things are falling apart in Cleveland necessarily, but I think that's part of it. So the locker room culture, you can't just throw a bunch of names on a team and expect to win. It's got to come together and it's got to be a culture fit, which I think that's why they brought in Brian Flores. And I think, you know, the ideals to build something similar to what's going on in New England, but they've got to hit the quarterback and you've got a lot of draft picks to do it. And I think that's, you know, the Browns, they've drafted multiple quarterbacks. The Arizona Cardinals, they draft the first round quarterback, a top 10 quarterback, come back and draft a quarterback number one. And I have no problem with that as long as they end up getting the right quarterback, because that's the key in the end. So you got to nail that one and then you go from there.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And it also brings me, I like to use the term the nest. You know, if you're getting ready to draft a quarterback, you better build a nice comfy nest for that baby to get hatched in. And say what you want about the Giants, I think they built a nice nest, and I'm not sure Daniel Jones would have been I know he wouldn't have been my pick. But I thought they built a nice nest for Jones. And why I'm bringing this up is it good or bad to have Odell with a rookie quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, do you want Antonio Brown with a rookie quarterback? Yeah, they're great, but are they doing more harm than good as in the nest? And I felt like the Giants just wanted Odell out of the nest, that they wanted Barkley and a bunch of slot receivers and an improving offensive line. That's a nice, cushy landing spot for a rookie quarterback and Eli there to kind of mentor you.
That's a great point. And that brings me actually to some teams that did not trade, some other teams aside from the Bengals that didn't make many moves at the deadline. The New York Jets is one. They did send, which I like this deal, Leonard Williams, sending him for a third and a fifth, because he was definitely a guy that I don't think fit into their long-term plans, even though he's a really good football player. Coming up, I want to get into the Jets, the moves they did not make, if those were wise choices or not. Washington, the Bears, some very interesting teams standing pat at the deadline. The New York Jets didn't get another deal done Tuesday, despite the rumors, and there was a ton of rumors surrounding the Jets, so they were definitely burning up the phone lines. Rumors involving Le'Veon Bell, Robbie Anderson, late chatter about safety Jamal Adams, which was sort of a surprise at the very end of the deadline. The Cowboys and Ravens rumored to be going hard after Jamal Adams. Could you imagine Adams in Baltimore with Earl Thomas, Peters, who they just got, Marlon Humphrey in that secondary?
Or Dallas, too.
They've got a fantastic secondary.
Great piece to add to any defense.
Le'Veon Bell would have made sense to move, and I think I saw some rumors that, you know, they would have taken a fourth-round pick and a turkey sandwich, as somebody put it, for Le'Veon Bell, which makes sense with his salary and stuff like that. But, you know, Robbie Anderson, you don't want to move too many pieces around away from that nest. Le'Veon Bell might be overpaid right now for what you're getting from him, but he's going to help your young quarterback. If you can run the ball, you can have someone who can pick up the blitz for Sam Darnold, be an outlet receiver. You know, maybe it's better that they didn't get what they wanted for Le'Veon Bell and Robbie Anderson to give Sam Darnold something to utilize on offense.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, be nice if they had somebody to block for him, but that's not happening. You know, DeBrickashaw Ferguson's not walking through the door. Yeah, a lot to digest there. Like, the Jets are an odd one because I like the Leonard Williams move because they got a lot and he was going to leave anyway. They need all the picks they can get. But to consider moving Jamal Adams makes me want to pull my hair out a little bit. Like, he is a leader. He's tough. I mean, I've been saying for a while, I think him and Derwin James might go down as the Troy and Ed Reed of this generation. You know, I mean, this great, great building block. And I don't understand that unless you just got an absolute king's ransom and it's a Tunsil type move and you just want every pick you can get. But what kind of culture are you building there too? You know, like, they've taken some questionable, you know, character guys. It seemed like it's possibly one and done for Gase. I mean, to your point, obviously goal number one has to be build the best nest for Darnold and build the most comfortable and best environment for him to succeed. And I think we can really question if that's what's going on or not, because it sounds like they could have moved Bell or Anderson just as easily as kept them. Just makes me think, do they have a plan?
That's interesting. And culture-wise, this is the other thing. So, and it's the downside of there being a lot of player movement and trades, because then it gets into the players' heads. And you talk about culture, you talk about locker room, and Jamal Adams, and we saw it with Minkah Fitzpatrick. He's a leader, and he was that way at Alabama. The Steelers love his attitude and his personality and the leadership that he brings. But in Miami, he wanted out. And Jamal Adams seems like it's becoming that same situation where he wouldn't mind moving on from the New York Jets. And that's when things don't get good. And it's not good for fans. It's not good for the player themselves. It's hard on the coaches. And it's, you don't want a ton of players sitting out, pouting, that want out of where they currently are and continually cause a problem. We saw it in Jacksonville with eventually Jalen Ramsey, as good as he was, a cornerstone player. They moved on from him because of whatever reasons he didn't want to be around. And that kind of brings me to the last team here that did not make any moves, which was a little bit surprising, was the Washington Redskins and Trent Williams staying put. And basically, as soon as the deadline happened, he was like, well, okay, that was my last shot at getting out of here. And so he's going to stay put, but not quite on his couch. It's being reported that he is reporting to Washington and will not play for another team in 2019, but it's still not clear if he'll actually play for Washington either. I don't know how you report to a team but then still not play.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I assumed when I read that he was reporting that he's going to be dressing every week and protecting Haskins' blindside, which I thought, okay, maybe this guy's disgruntled, but he needs to get his, you know, his year in. He's not going to sit out the whole season. That's bad business. Ask Melvin Gordon, ask Le'Veon Bell. And maybe we get to see Haskins actually protected and grow as a quarterback. So I guess I have to look more into that situation. I just assumed he was going to play.
I thought the same thing. And then the last report I saw was that he still doesn't plan on playing. Basically, Williams had to report by, I think it's week 10. If you don't report by week 10.
Why did he do that in week 1?
Right. Yeah. But if you don't report by week 10, you don't get credit for the season, I believe is how it works. So we're getting close to that. And the deadline was basically his last shot to play somewhere else. So now he'll collect a paycheck at least, which is obviously part of it for him, I'm sure, and tried to move on in 2020, but still under contract through next year at about $12.5 million. So this might continue with Trent Williams, and hopefully for everybody's sake, they figure something out and he's not just sitting again in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an odd one. last note on this subject, at least for me, is Minka and Jamal Adams come to mind as the absolute type of guys you do want to build around. Those are culture builders. They're young. They're from huge schools and were coveted by their teammates there as leaders, and it's translated to the NFL. And if you have a disgruntled Jamal Adams now in New York, that's going to have a terrible ripple effect on the locker room. Is he going to be, you know, this offseason saying, I want traded? And Minka, I'm a little too close to the situation, so I don't lump him with the what I call the whiny guys that just make a big stink, that just want it out like AB did here. But a big thing like Minka hated was first the culture and the losing, but they used him at linebacker so much that he was just afraid of getting his head beat in every play. I mean, the defense never left the field. He wasn't protected. He's near the line of scrimmage on a lot of snaps, taking on guards, thinking, I'm going to last like 2 years in this league. And if that's one of your best assets, that's not exactly the best way to use them for the long term.
It's pretty clear Minka Fitzpatrick, they should have been using him at free safety because he's been awesome for the Steelers at free safety. It was just like, you couldn't get that out of him? Like, what are you doing? You know something's wrong then.
Right, and you picked him just the year before, and you know him better than anyone. I mean, that's a strange situation. Also, these guys are all buddies. They all talk. They're all, you know, I'm going to sound super old, friends on Facebook. I'm sure they're much closer than that, you know. And then you get the reputation. Like, I always use the example of, like, growing up, my Pittsburgh Pirates had to pay way more than anybody else to go get a right fielder. You know what I mean? Like, then these teams, nobody wants to go there. I mean, yeah, I'll go if you give me $120 instead of $100. But that's bad business. You know, like, it's hard to attract the free agents at a reasonable cost where the Patriots are paying 90 cents on the dollar and you got to pay 100 and a quarter.
And basically we saw that with Le'Veon Bell going to New York, and he's probably thinking, okay, you got your young quarterback, you got Jamal Adams, you got some things here to build around. Maybe I'll go there. Maybe I'm one of the last pieces and this thing takes off and it's New York and I'm going to get a whole bunch of money. And it's going to be a lot harder to convince people to go to, say, Cincinnati or even the Dolphins right now. If you're just, all you're doing is losing, it's like, show me something first, then maybe we can go make something happen there.
Yeah, and I also don't think there was as big a market for Lev Bell as he would lead you to believe. And you mentioned New York. I mean, he wants to be a rapper, so.
Right. Well, he did drop that album, too. That's right.
Right. I heard it was really, really good.
Yeah, I listened to it. It was it was not for me. I'll put it that way.
I'm not a music critic, so.
A couple teams real quick that also didn't do anything at the deadline. Bears did not add a quarterback, and the Browns were not able to add an offensive tackle, even though they were in on numerous players, according to reports.
Yeah, and the one I also heard was the Lions were, quote, close to acquiring Devontae Freeman. And that would have made some sense. I didn't think of Freeman as a trade candidate, but he would have been a logical one considering what bad shape Atlanta's in. You know, how much tread does he have left on his tires? A running back needy team should definitely have been pumping the, you know, been looking into that one. Chicago's tough. I mean, because they don't have a first round pick next year. They traded up for Trubisky. They're going to pretend to love him, or maybe they still do and are just misevaluating their ability to evaluate. But I think all of us realize what they need. And does that mean they should have got Dalton or Foles and really been short on picks? I'm not sure, because then in the end, you end up in Matt Schaub quarterback purgatory again.
Yeah, that's a good point, but you almost can't do nothing. And it goes back to when I was talking about winners and losers. To me, the winners were the teams that were able to make deals, add players that will help them into the postseason, and teams that collected draft picks for players that wouldn't be helping them win now. And when I look at all the teams that maybe were losers, I feel like all of these non-trades, there were some missed opportunities. And I get that you can't sell a player and not get enough back for him. And on the other side of it, like you mentioned, you can't just overpay for guys and go crazy. But we're seeing a time in the NFL where maybe you're not hitting on a high percentage of your draft picks, so you think you can lose a couple, and maybe the salary cap continues to go up after the new collective bargaining agreement in 2021. It might skyrocket even further. There's people who believe that it's already to the point with how often and how much the salary cap has gone up. It's almost like a fake thing that really doesn't hamper you that much to maybe get a couple players here and there to replace some draft picks. So to me, I think we're getting to the point in the NFL where if you're good and you're a team like the Bears who have such an obvious thing, you got to go for it and you got to make something happen. So I would probably put the Bears in the losers category at the trade deadline just because you got to try something to salvage what's going on there with a really good defense and try to fix that thing as hard as you can, basically.
Yeah, and I will be very critical of the Bears in the offseason if they don't acquire, even if it's Jameis Winston. But I'm thinking like Cam Newton, Tom Brady's been mentioned there, Big Ben. I mean, like some guy that you know is a good quarterback, that's a veteran, that's won a lot of games in this league. I'll be critical if they don't do something this offseason. I can kind of understand not doing it now because you don't love the options and this kind of punt on the year. But I hear what you're saying. And the last team I wanted to mention, too, I think the Jacksonville Jags are winners, too, because they knew Ramsey wasn't going to be there. And sure, they'd love to have him all these Sundays going forward. But they're still winning games. The defense is still pretty darn good without him. And now they have a lot of draft capital. They still have Foles. I mean, I don't see this team with massive, massive needs in the offseason. And they got all these first-round picks. That I think they're set up to be maybe a wild card team this year, but you know, add some studs in the offseason.
And it's really nice when you get a young quarterback to jump in like Gardner Minshew that might be somebody who sticks, and that
doesn't cost any money.
That's free money right there, absolutely. Some non-trades at the deadline, a ton of action though this season in the couple of weeks leading up to the trade deadline. It was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to remember now that the trade deadline is the Tuesday after week 8 because now it's a thing.
It is a thing. And even though there was a little bit of a letdown, it was still a lot of fun. And I don't think it's going away. And I think the action will be more and more. And I think we'll see offseason trades too.
And we will continue to break down all the news. And we'll preview Thursday Night Football on tomorrow's program right here, Locked On NFL.